Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin. Welcome to Cavs, a podcast. I'm Nate Smith, and I'm here with Evil Genius. And it's been a depressing winter so far for the Cavs. they fall tonight 118 to 108 to the Warriors. They had a good first half, but again, could not sustain a lead in the second half, and kind of fell apart. Fourth quarter, they only scored 17 points, including, I think they had about 2 points in the first 6 minutes or so.
It was on a
Tristan Thompson dribbler where it kind of hit the rim and went in. So it wasn't a pretty game.
Well, it was pretty for three quarters.
Yeah. But LeBron, 32 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, but 8 turnovers, and that was a depressing number.
Yeah, that'll happen when you throw a lot of jump passes.
Yeah, a lot of jump passes, a lot of blind passes. Isaiah Thomas, as you said during the audio test, looked rusty. 8 of 21 from the field, including, and most of that was because of 1 of 7 from three. To go with 4 assists, only one turnover, which was nice. 19 points, but it took him 21 shots to do it.
He just doesn't have his legs. You can tell.
Yeah. And Dwayne Wade, who doesn't realize he doesn't have any legs, 5 of 14, including, I want to say his shot chart was probably everything at the basket went in and everything not at the basket did not go in.
I'd say that's probably 100% right.
He jacked up.
He missed 8 shots, and all of them were from that place he likes to dribble to, just above the right elbow, and kind of fall away as he's launching it, and those never went in.
Yeah, and then the other spot being he missed a three.
Although that was kind of like a necessity three.
No, it was in the flow of the offense. It just, his jumper isn't there. So.
Oh no, I thought, like, he shot 2, I think, because he missed one with the shot clock running down, which I don't blame him for, because what are you gonna do?
But right, exactly.
But he did miss another one earlier. That's right.
Exactly. Then to go along with that, we had Kevin Love, who had a nice game but couldn't get the ball. He only had 9 shots, while Isaiah Thomas had 21 and Dwayne Wade had 14.
Well, he only played 27 minutes, though, because of foul trouble.
He did get in some foul trouble, and I didn't like seeing him pick up the cheap fouls early. I wish he needs to let some plays go because of the way he picks up fouls. And it wasn't pleasant to watch. Jay Crowder had a tough shooting game again, 1 of 4 from three. I mean, the Cavs as a team, 7 for 28 from three.
That's not going to get it done, unfortunately. No. I mean, they scored a lot in the paint. They had good success in the paint because the Warriors chose to go small. Both Zaza and JaVale McGee were DNPs, and they started Jordan Bell at the center in the front court, but when they go small like that, the Cavs just didn't. They took advantage early on, but they didn't really take advantage in the second half. Unfortunately,
into the third and into the fourth, they just settled for a lot of shots.
Well, and that's kind of what they've been doing. I know you'll talk about that in a little bit, but at one point in the fourth quarter, they missed 14 of 15 shots, and you're just not going to win games against anybody that way. You know, but they were, yeah, it really didn't get away from them until the last 5 or 6 minutes. And, you know, that when the Warriors pushed the lead to 10 with their second unit, really, I mean, Klay Thompson and Draymond Green were out there, but Klay and, Curry and Durant were on the bench until about 5 minutes left in the quarter. So, you give their bench credit. They played enough defense to keep the Cavs from taking high percentage shots. And, you know, they just tired, whether it was tired legs for Isaiah or Dwayne or LeBron, any of those guys that are their scorers, they didn't have anybody that could hit a shot in the first 6 or 7 minutes of the fourth quarter, and that was essentially the ball game.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Cavs were scoring at a pretty pretty regular clip earlier in the season, and they've been shooting terribly and scoring terribly. And one of my observations, and I don't know if you agree with it, but they look out of shape. They look like all the partying in January has, and not practicing, has taken its toll.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously Isaiah, you can't really blame. I mean, the guy's got to work his way back into shape, but the rest of them, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say LeBron's out of shape. I mean, he's still doing what he does and probably trying to do too much with the 8 turnovers, force the ball to guys that just aren't there. And Golden State's a good defensive team. They play the passing lanes really well, probably better than most teams, but he's consistently been coughing the ball up quite a bit. And you know, I think they're still trying to figure out how to play with Isaiah. I mean, he played 32 minutes tonight, which is the most he played all season, but his shot looks rusty and he looks a little tentative going into the lane, doing the things that he did so well last year. And, you know, I mean, I still believe it's a matter of time, before he gets his legs back. And I mean, there were flashes of it in the first half when you saw him really facilitate. And, I mean, he draws so much attention. There was that great alley-oop dunk that he threw to LeBron where literally two guys left LeBron and went locked onto IT as he was driving down the lane, and it left LeBron wide open for a reverse jam. And that'll be the key to how they can use him going forward, because when his jumper's not falling, at least, you know, last year especially, you would see him he would just be relentless in driving inside and getting those ticky tack fouls that he and James Harden are so good at doing. But we haven't really seen that a lot yet. A couple here and there, but that'll probably be the, you know, the last thing to kind of come back, that and his 3-point shooting. So, you know, I still think it's too early to read too much into it. I was actually encouraged by the game tonight because they played 3 really good quarters. They thoroughly outplayed the Warriors in the second quarter, and you know, they got into some lazy shot making in the third, and that's really when Durant started to go off, and you know, they weren't having a whole lot of success guarding him tonight. And you know, and then when you have a drought like that to start the fourth quarter, you know, I mean, they were only down 2 going into the final period, and unfortunately, that's they'd lose to most teams if they pulled a 1-for-15 first half of a quarter, you know, in a close game. So, and certainly to a team that's got a well rested Steph Curry and Kevin Durant coming off the bench. But I liked them. I mean, they, even in the fourth, they did fight back a bit. You know, and then unfortunately, the inevitable Durant threes, and I think Swaggy P hit a 3, and that was the backbreaker. And, you know, but they were still fighting into the fourth quarter. I'm not so sure that Isaiah should have been out there in the fourth quarter.
I think the problem with that is the Dwayne Wade was so bad, and Jay Crowder wasn't much better. But so do you run JR and LeBron, who I didn't see it, but a lot of people on the Life's thread said JR was really bad, and LeBron was kind of ignoring him on the wing, too. So,
yeah. Yeah, JR has not been...
I mean, he didn't have a terrible game tonight.
He didn't have a great game guarding Clay early.
No, and Kyle Korver played, I would say, the best defense on Clay of anyone.
He did, but then when he does that, I think he unfortunately, when Korver has to expend that much energy defensively, it's that much less he's able to kind of run through screens on the offensive side. So he only wound up with three shots. And I mean, to their credit, they know how dangerous he is, and they put Draymond on him here and there. They put Clay on him. I mean, they paid attention to Korver, so he wasn't going to get any real wide open looks. But I noticed a few open looks that you know, when guys would drive inside, they missed him on, like,
yeah, Jeff Green missed a couple of them.
Well, yeah, and that's it. I think these guys sometimes, when they Cavs have guys on their team who, when they decide to drive, the big men I'm talking about, like Jeff Green and Crowder and Love, even to some degree, although less so. But they tend to put their head down, and they really just kind of go to the rack and don't keep an enough of an open look on guys that might be open around the perimeter. And I think that's what made playing, and a lot of people have called for it, playing like Channing Frye, is that Channing Frye has a great two-man game with Kyle Korver. And so when Channing Frye puts a ball on the deck, he can find Kyle Korver.
Yeah, well, and the other side of that being – he just clears the passing lane so much because you got to keep a guy out to guard them too.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, look, he came in, he played 2 minutes or not even a minute and a half at the end, came in and almost instantly hit a three. So
he drained an FU Ty Lue three pointer.
Yeah.
Or as I call it, an F Lue three pointer.
A flu three pointer.
Yeah.
I mean, look, again, I know this. It's always a negative when they lose, and this certainly didn't have the same sort of impact as the blowouts against Minnesota and Toronto last week, or even the 22-point choke job against the Pacers. You know, this was more in line with how the Cavs typically play the Warriors, where, you know, there's some really good stuff early, and they're right in it, and then they beat themselves down the stretch. And yeah. not to discount Golden State's defense, because they're a good defensive team, but they haven't been as good this year as they have been some years in the past. I mean, they've been giving up a lot of points. And their bench isn't nearly as strong as it has been in previous years, but you know they took advantage in that fourth quarter, where as much as the Cavs beat them up in the second quarter, that second unit, you know, with David West and Livingston and
yeah, those guys played much better in the second half than they did in the first.
Yeah.
And a lot of people on the Life that were like, oh, living, you know, old man West, but David West has been really good this year. And Livingston, you know, has always killed the Cavs.
But West was really garbage in the first half.
And then he wasn't good.
And then he just, like, he threw down a dunk on Tristan, and he managed to play some good defense at the rim. It was interesting, too, like, after they started Jordan Bell in the first half, they started Looney in the second half, which gave them a little bit more length.
And I think it was just kind of to mix it up a little bit, too.
Maybe, you know. Although it seemed to be more effective. I mean, Jordan Bell is an active guy, but he's still a rookie and makes rookie mistakes. So.
Right.
And Kevin Love was just lighting him up early.
Yeah.
So, which unfortunately didn't happen in the second half. I mean, Kevin had most of his points in the first half, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other So there's a, one of my biggest beefs, I guess, is second half, Cavs did not run a coherent offense. Just kind of dribbled around and jacked up shots early in the shot. I mean, you know as well as I do that long mid-rangers early in the shot clock are one of the worst shots you can take in basketball. And the Cavs were just doing that over and over and over and over. But the other side of that was that we saw some stuff in the first half that was working really well that the Cavs just didn't even run in the second half. I mean, they ran a lot of plays with Isaiah Thomas and LeBron as the screener, that right wing pick and roll. The Cavs scored three straight buckets on it, including that gorgeous lob to LeBron. And then they never ran it in the second half. And it was like, well, why? And that's my biggest beef with Ty Lue in general, is they find something that works, and it's not just within a game, it's within the regular season. You know, you see with Tyronn Lue or with Channing Frye that works, and then they go away from it, and you just kind of never know why. And they definitely went away from that, and I don't know if it's LeBron breaking off the plays or if it's the players. One of the things, I don't know if you heard that bit about Phil Handy and, you know, LeBron yelling at Phil Handy and basically, you know, saying, hey, the players got it. We got this. And it's like, well, are the players just running this team? I mean, is that what's going on here?
Well, that's what it seems like. I mean,
it does seem like that, especially the way they don't even run an offense. So I don't know. And I don't, you know, I am pretty much of the opinion that, that Ty Lue needs to go. I mean, David Black got fired for a lot less than this.
But David Black tried to coach. I don't feel like Ty Lue's ever tried to coach. Like he just, his hallmark is that he can handle LeBron and challenge LeBron and draw up really good inbounds plays. And aside from that, I'm not sure because,
and maybe he is coaching the players that he has, and that's the only way that you can coach them. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, maybe. I mean, look, that's just it. Like, it's been said many times, LeBron doesn't really – he hasn't really had a coach to coach him. I mean, probably the best coach he ever had was Spoelstra, and Spoelstra can do a lot with a little. But Spoelstra kind of reminded me of Blatt, really. I mean, maybe a more personable version of Blatt, less ego than Blatt had. And that was probably, you know, as people have forecast before, that was Blatt's real downfall, was that, you know, he was still a little, he had a little too much ego that he couldn't check at the door. But that's it. Like, there's plenty of guys you could bring in that would be better coaches probably than Tyronn Lue. But to what end? If LeBron's going to buy into a system, then that's that, mattress man, as they say. But like, that's
what mattress man?
Oh yeah, it's from a old movie, Punch Drunk Love.
That's
that measurement. Well, but I worked on them. But that I'm just saying. Just,
oh, okay. It okay sorry.
When everybody says that, I just always add mattress man. People usually look at me with equal, you know, stares of like, what the hell did you just say?
But I always forget you worked on that movie. I do like that movie.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. Probably Sandler's best movie. But anyways, I digress. I'm just saying, you're not going to get LeBron to play for anybody. He's not going to play for Popovich. He's not going to play for...
He'd play for Fizdale?
No. Well, maybe. I mean, at least Fizdale, he's got a connection with Fizdale from when he was on the Heat. But
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, wasn't Fizdale available when Black got fired?
Yeah, but I think the plan was to bring in Ty Lue as the interim.
Yeah.
That's why he was the quote-unquote associate head coach.
Yeah. No, look, I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, I just think the coaches
You don't think this is a coaching issue?
It is a coaching issue, but it's not one that can be rectified. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. So, like, not playing Chetty Osmond tonight when he's been playing really well for the Cavs. Is that on Ty Lue or is that on LeBron?
Sure. Well, it's hard to say because, I mean, on the surface, it's on Ty Lue, but who's to say that LeBron isn't in the huddle saying, I don't want
a rookie,
inexperienced guys playing in this game against Golden State? who's to say LeBron's not in there saying, like, Channing can't guard people. Like, I know he can hit threes, but he can't guard people when we're playing a team like that. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I mean, I don't know. I'm not in the huddle either.
I agree with you.
I'm just saying, just to kind of expand it out. Like, and then what's Ty Lue supposed to say about any of it without appearing to be, you know, the guy that's putting the blame on LeBron? He doesn't want to be that guy, and then he loses all credibility, and he's got no leverage, right? So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it's weird, and maybe it's a cop out, but I just think there's got to be a reasonable explanation for it, because any other coach would play Seti Osman 10 to 15 minutes against a team like this that likes to get up and down the floor, because he's probably one of the quicker guys on the team.
Right.
You know, any coach worth his salt is going to find some minutes for Channing Frye, because you know he's going to hit a three, or at least give you a little bit more spacing with, so that Korver can get free or LeBron can drive a lane or whatever.
I just felt like part of what was going on with the jacking up the mid-rangers was Thompson just totally clogging up the offense.
Oh, sure.
I mean, they just.
But again, like, LeBron's always believed that Tristan is his ultimate safety valve, right? And LeBron still probably looks at him that way, even though he hasn't been, and he still hasn't. He's had flashes where he's gotten better.
So your theory is that LeBron is – that Ty Lue is not a terrible coach, but LeBron is.
Oh, I'm not saying that. I don't know what kind of coach Ty Lue is. I'm saying, like, we'll never find out.
We can't know, at least not on this team.
Until LeBron retires or leaves, or Ty Lue gets fired and goes to coach somewhere else, we'll never know.
Yeah. And
but by the way, I wouldn't have known that Eric Spoelstra was that good of a coach until after LeBron left and you saw him do some of the coaching jobs he's done the last few years.
That is true.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you look at that and you say, well, all right. I mean.
Yeah, and it's a players' league. I mean.
Is Mike Brown a good coach? I mean, Mike Brown won a bunch of games in Cleveland. He went to L.A. and failed miserably. But now he's a really good defensive bench coach for the world champions. So who knows? I don't know. Is Mike Brown a good coach? Tom would say he was.
I think you can be well, and it also depends on the era, too. I mean, Mike Brown in the 2000s, probably a lot better than Mike Brown now, where it's just an offensive league, you know. you know, maybe, what's his name? Mike, who's the coach of the Rockets?
Oh, D'Antoni?
Mike D'Antoni, maybe not a great coach for the aughts, but maybe a good coach now, you know?
You think Mike D'Antoni will win a championship with that style, ever?
I think he could with this Houston team if the Rockets, or if Golden State didn't exist. You know, if there wasn't
but they do exist.
Well, you never know what's going to happen. So I think he could if things bounced right. I mean, basically meaning Clay or Steph or Durant got hurt. Sure.
But did you see Ty Lue's comment today?
No.
They said, they were asking him, like, he was like, it's good to be home, back at the queue. We've been on the road 17 out of 20 days. And they're like, yeah, well, and they're like, people are saying you're not the best team in the East anymore. And he's like, well, I don't agree. He goes, I still think we're the best team in the East. And they're like, well, what leads you to that conclusion? And he said, because we have the best player in the world. Like, that right there is like, that's an answer of somebody who's basically a placeholder. He's the guy who is, and look, I'm not bagging on his ability to actually get LeBron to do certain things, or his ability to stand up to LeBron. It sounds like that happened. Although most of those stories come from Ty Lue himself, and they almost seems like the way that he presents them, they're sanctioned by LeBron. It's like, yeah, you can say it. You can say that. You can tell them that you pissed me off and made me mad at halftime, and I came out and did more. Like, but okay, so he's a great cheerleader, right? He's a great cheerleader who knows how to draw up inbounds plays, and maybe that's all they need, because that's all LeBron will ever allow any coach of the Cavs to be.
Interesting. Interesting. So here's my question. If you are sitting there, you're the Cavs, you've got what looks like a completely, you know, moribund, feckless Cavs team that doesn't seem to be able to find their way right now. You know, you got Ty Lue sitting there. He has won you a ring, but, you know, David Blatt was fired for a season that looked a lot better than this one. And then you've got, you know, the coming LeBron decision 2018 combined with David Fizdale, a guy he's a big fan of, being a coach, a free agent
sure.
right now, plus a guy that looks like he could probably help you develop young players, as you know, he kind of was somebody who did that in Miami and Memphis. He kind of favored the younger guys over the older guys. Even if LeBron leaves, he would not be a bad coaching choice. What do you do if you're the Cavs? When I say the Cavs, I mean Dan Gilbert, because it's ultimately only his decision. Do you say, hey, I'm gonna let Ty Lue go and bring this other guy in and hope it helps me keep LeBron and hope it kind of shakes up the team a little bit? Or well, hold on. I'm not saying what does evil genius do. I mean, I think I know your answer. What is, do you think Dan Gilbert will make?
Oh, I'll tell you what Dan Gilbert does. You know what Dan Gilbert does?
What?
Whatever LeBron wants.
Okay.
But, no, I mean, let me clarify with you.
But the question is LeBron going to tell him what he wants this year?
No, of course not. Why would he tell him? Here's the thing. LeBron James likes to be in control. Okay? LeBron James likes to be in control, which is why he likes to be in control, but doesn't like to blame, right? So he wants all the control, but he doesn't want it to ever see. So if you're going to be LeBron's coach, you have to be the guy out front deflecting everything and making it like, hey, you know what? I can talk to LeBron. We're going to be fine. Just get us to the playoffs. We got the best player in the world. Yada, yada. These are the things that I'm saying, right? Like, these are the things that I'm paid to say. I don't think David Blatt did very well as a mouthpiece, which is why he got fired, right? So ultimately, LeBron, here's the biggest reason why LeBron won't go anywhere next year, why he'll double down and sign the biggest contract in NBA history with the Cavaliers this summer, because where else is he going to go and have that control? Who else is going to cede this amount of control to LeBron?
The answer might be every team that wants him.
I doubt that. You think Houston with James Harden is just going to say, yeah, sure, you come and do whatever you want, LeBron?
Fair point, but what about the Lakers?
Do you think
Magic Johnson?
Yeah, but see, the Lakers aren't going to have the cap space because the Lakers still can't figure out how to get out from under bad contracts that their previous owner made. And to be honest, there's nothing that LeBron would want from the Lakers. There's nothing that he gains from doing that.
Okay.
And he still won't have the control. He's not going to have control over Magic, over whoever that Magic decides he wants to have coach that team.
What about
half the reason he left Miami is because he couldn't have control down there, because he chafed at what Riley and Mickey Arison wanted him to do or not do.
And he chafed when they got rid of Mike Miller to cut salary, so.
No, but he chafed when Pat Riley said we gotta retool, we gotta man up, we gotta figure out. I'm like, no, I'm not gonna do that. I'm gonna go start over with some young guys, and then owner will pay me whatever I want, even though he wrote that letter back in Cleveland.
Okay, hey, I not arguing with you. Appreciate the strong take and respect the opinions. If it were me, and you're probably right, because Dan Gilbert doesn't know what LeBron wants, so he'll do nothing rather than doing the wrong thing.
The only thing Dan Gilbert will do that LeBron that might chafe LeBron is not trade the Brooklyn pick.
Right.
And because there's nobody, but it's at least defensible because you look around and Dan Gilbert could say, Ron, if LeBron said, you gotta trade that Brooklyn pick, give me more help. He'd be like, LeBron, who's even worth that?
Right. Right.
DeAndre Jordan? Yeah. Is he worth that? You already have DeAndre Jordan in Tristan Thompson, although DeAndre's a better defensive player, but still, you know, you're gonna be able to keep DeAndre Jordan on the floor? You don't think he's gonna clog the middle the same way that Tristan Thompson will?
I would disagree. DeAndre Jordan can post up smaller players and he's a much better finisher though.
We should not rehash
the arguments of podcasts past.
No, well, I should be allowed to defend myself is what it should be, but whatever.
Okay.
I only live in LA and watch DeAndre Jordan play on a relatively nightly basis. He's a great rebounder. He's a good shot blocker. He can throw down lob dunks. That's about it, man.
Okay.
You gonna trade the Brooklyn pick for that? Mm. Good luck.
Not me. No. Not me.
But I'm saying, like, who is there that you would look at and say, if you're Dan Gilbert and you, that's the tiniest bit of leverage Dan Gilbert has right now is to say, show me somebody who's worth that pick, because look at these guys. Look at Trey. What's his name? Who just went off for what 40-14-5 or something like that the other night? Trey Young, or Doncic?
No, I said it to Zavac the other night, or Dave Zavac the other night, or this morning. I said, you know, he's like, why you have the greatest player of a generation, and he's sitting there, and you know, and you've got a chance to win a championship, and you're not seriously considering trading that pick, and I'm like. If you were sitting there in 2003, and I think this draft is deeper than 2003,
yeah,
would you trade that pick? I wouldn't. That's a golden ticket, you know.
Yeah. No, but I would if there was someone worth getting.
Right, exactly. If the Thunder
all of a sudden said, okay, well, quietly, Paul George is available.
Yeah. Or
yes, I would. Even for 2 months of Paul George, I'd do it.
Okay.
But that's about like, I'm not doing it for 35-year-old Marc Gasol.
You're not doing it for Kent Bazemore and
No, Brandon. I'm not doing it for Kent Bazemore and Dwayne Dedman. I'm not even doing it for Tyreek and Chandler Parsons, which is actually the trade I think they should explore.
Chandler Parsons is done.
No, okay, but
he's the cap filler to make it work.
Of course.
Okay. Because
Tyreek Evans, unfortunately, only makes $3.5 million, and then you'd have to throw somebody in because you'd have to get rid of a TT or a Shump or someone like that. So that's all I'm saying. Like, it'd be nice to have a Tyreek Evans run in your second unit. That's all I'm saying.
Or a George Hill.
I think you're way too over. I mean, again, I'm George Hill's fine, but that's a big contract to take on for a guy that gives
but it's
you
only two
maybe,
years.
Yeah, I don't
Plus
know.
He's shooting
I've never been a George Hill fan.
Shooting 46% from three.
Yeah, most of it's probably in garbage time.
So
when
what?
When they're trying to catch up.
Would you rather see George Hill taking threes or Jay Crowder?
I don't know. Probably George Hill, but I don't know. I just think it's...
If I never see Jay Crowder take another three again, that guy...
He hit one tonight.
He did, and then he missed four more.
Three more.
But he just has the worst footwork and body alignment, it seems like to me, when he shoots. Like,
well, he's unfortunately not getting better. I mean, they only played him 21 minutes tonight, and he just couldn't. He just couldn't stay on the floor.
So I figured out what his shot looks like. His three-point shot looks like, you know how Kevin Durant kind of gets all twisted around at the free throw line, but he's a really good free throw shooter? He kind of looks, when he shoots threes, he looks like Kevin Durant's free throw. Like, it's just like kind of that weird angle, and
right.
It doesn't look like he could, and it's way too flat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, here's the other thing that's going on with the Cavs right now. LeBron's jumper falling back to earth after, you know, it was electric early in the season. His jumper has just slowly gotten worse and worse and worse. And I'm gonna pull up some stats to back that up.
Well, as you're pulling up stats, I'm just gonna finish my rant on the whole Dan Gilbert situation because
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
Well, off. No, you didn't cut me off. I'm buying you some time, but I'm also saying that, you know, just to clarify, like, I could be dead wrong. LeBron could be like just playing everybody and saying, I'm just going to go join my banana boat crew in Houston, or, you know, I'm going to go join the Sixers and be a mentor to Ben Simmons for the next 4 years until I retire as a Cav in 2022. I think there's an 85% chance, maybe 90, that he's right back in Cleveland signing the gigantic deal that he made possible with the guys that he sat down to draw up the new NBA contracts with. And, you know, I mean, it's probably an easier conversation to convince him. If there's nobody worth getting that really puts you over the top against Golden State, it's probably an easier conversation to say, dude, let's just hang on to that pick and give you a, you know, one of these top rookies that you can mentor next year. Or we can have one of these guys and then put together a package for another star, you know, at the trade deadline next year.
Yeah.
It's just a better carrot to dangle, and it makes a lot more sense. I would think it would make more sense to business LeBron, you know, yeah, but.
And what the big comparison now for Trae Young is Steph Curry. I mean, the way he shoots.
Yeah, the way he shoots.
And then a lot of people think that Doncic is better than Trae Young. So
maybe
I don't
look, there's a lot of good young talent coming. I mean, look at the NBA today. Like, there's no denying the fact that the young guys are taking over. I mean, there's a lot of great, I won't say great, really good rookies this year. There's a lot of really good second year players that were rookies last year. Guys that are really making a difference and that are starting and that are playing on playoff teams. So
yeah, I agree with you. So LeBron James shooting November 41%, October 41%, November 43%, with an average.
This is from the field or from three?
From three. Okay. So I'll give you the totals. 58%, 59% from the field in November. 58% from the field in December with a 43% 3-point percentage. Then going into January, dropped down to 35 3-point percent with a 52% from the field. Then we get into, I'm sorry, that was December. Then into January, he's shooting 29% from three. Still attempting around four a game, down from almost six a game earlier in the season, and then 52% from the field. So his shooting has definitely fallen off. Truthfully, I would like to see. I didn't have a problem when he was throwing up 5.3 threes a game, as long as he was doing it with confidence. But the other thing that's happening is I feel like he's bringing his hand across his face again more. He's kind of losing that stroke he had earlier this season. So I don't know. But the Cavs in general have just shot like crap, in December or in January. So,
yeah. Well, they didn't in the first half. The first half they shot 58% and guys were hitting shots and, you know, they were getting into the paint. And then, again, they kind of resorted back to the threes and, you know, as the second quarter and second half went along. And, you know, a lot of it's the guys that are taking them. I mean, Jay Crowder took four threes tonight.
Yeah.
Isaiah took seven, and they made two combined.
Yeah, Jay Crowder should not take threes unless he is wide the F open.
Yeah.
And he should not ever take that three, dribble in two steps, and take a two that you know, 5 seconds into the shot clock. It was just
Jeff Green took three threes tonight and missed all.
Two of them were absolutely necessities, though. I mean, he was wide open when he shot them. And if you don't shoot that shot, you just throw off the whole flow of the offense.
No, it's true. It's true, but
he's not a great three-point shooter.
The guy that's not taking three-pointers anymore is J.R. Smith, who seems to have lost all confidence in any shot beyond a layup. Yeah. So, credit, he's driven. Yeah, he drove a few times tonight, but that's a huge dimension that gets taken away from this team if JR's not a weapon offensively anymore.
Yeah,
because it's just one more guy that's not going to score when he's on the floor, especially when you've got him out there with Tristan and Crowder. You know, that's, you know, with him and Crowder starting, that's 2/3 of your lineup that's not shooting the ball or dangerous enough to shoot the ball. So one of those guys has to start, you know, thinking or trending upward, as they say. But again, given how the previous few games went, this was at least a step in the right direction. The Cavs played a really strong half, and then whether they got tired, they got lazy, they started to not run any plays whatsoever.
When Kevin Love went out with foul trouble, it really hurt them because he had kind of broken the game open for the Cavs, gotten two straight threes and had that big block, and then he went to the bench.
Oh, he's some kind of kryptonite for Curry too, man. Like, he made Curry look silly a couple of times tonight.
Oh, when they got caught in one-on-ones, yeah.
Yeah,
and I think part of it that happens is now is ever since that, like, Curry wants to replace the vine of Kevin Love stopping him with, you know, him lighting Kevin Love up, you know, with a three, and he just seems to refuse to drive on Kevin Love, and it's kind of funny. Yeah.
Well, I mean, to be honest, like, I think the Cavs know Steph's game well enough that he can't drive on them almost at all. I mean, he had that one wide open dunk today because Isaiah switched on him and he blew right by him.
Yeah.
But like LeBron abused him several times.
Yeah, and I wish that was the shot blocking LeBron we saw every game instead of just when we're playing the Warriors. So I feel like if he'd play with that kind of force all the time on defense, the Cavs.
Oh, he had some unbelievable blocks tonight.
Oh, he did.
I mean, the one on KD, the one over the square on Steph.
Yeah.
I mean,
Kevin had a couple blocks. Yeah. And I really felt like, so one of the, you know, the big complaint is why isn't Kevin Love getting the ball more? I mean, is it, especially, I just feel like Dwayne Wade takes way too many shots. Like, he needs to come in and be a facilitator. And that's, I think, honestly, why Calderon worked in kind of the same way as Dele worked, is when you're on an offense with, you know, a bunch of high usage players, if you have a point guard that can just, you know, hit wide open shots and, or in Dwayne Wade's case, just hit that cut from the corner and then just set guys up, it's great. But when you got guys that are just jacking low percentage shots, it's your offense is gonna fall apart.
Wade was as bad as he was in the second half, he was just as good in the first half. But he was doing those things. He was facilitating. The Jeff Green was just, it was Miami circa 2011 esque. You know, I mean, it was
like Chris Bosh feeling that play. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what, you know, that's good Dwayne Wade. And then the second half we saw bad D Wade where he just kept going to that place on the floor and jacking up shots and almost refusing to let Isaiah kind of bring the ball up the floor. You know, it was weird. I was like, well, if you're going to don't make Isaiah the off guard, like give him the ball, tell him, we know your shot's rusty, but give him the ball and have him facilitate, you know, but it didn't happen. And that's where things started to unravel a bit.
For sure. for sure. And the lack of structure to the Cavs offense in the second half. I mean, first half, they were running a lot of pick and roll, and I didn't see nearly as much in the second half. They just didn't want to set screens, and everybody standing around. And like I said, it just seemed like the Cavs were out of shape. I did do a little research to try to prove that the Cavs fourth quarter scoring was bad, but I have not been able to do that.
That's all right.
No, not that I haven't been able to do the research. I just haven't been able to prove it. I mean, the only game that really seemed like the Cavs offense was in the fourth quarter was bad before this one was Boston. And maybe it's, you know, they get in these intense games, but man, did they seem out of shape tonight. And
well, those two blowout games last week, they got behind early. I mean, it was because Isaiah was like 0-for-17 combined in the first halves of those two games and 5-of-26 total. It's like, well, when your point guard's throwing up goose eggs, you're not going to score enough points. So right. I know they were behind by like 23 and 25 in the first halves of those two games. So there's not a lot of coming back from that probably.
Yeah. But. And that's, you know, again, one of your defenses for Tyronn Lue. You know, he's not out there throwing up those shots.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I think that Tyronn Lue knows that the only way Isaiah Thomas is going to be effective for this team is if he goes through the growing pains of getting back into
game shape
to be a weapon, you know? And yeah, so you got to give him his shots. And unfortunately, tonight they gave him 21 shots, which was the most on the team, and he hit 8. So, you know, if he hits 12 of those shots instead of 8, it's a different ball game.
It's a completely different ball game. Yeah, I'll agree with you. Yeah,
but that's, you know, I mean, that's the problem. And then when you got Wade, I mean, you think about it, Wade and Thomas together, your two point guards, shot 13 of what, 35 tonight.
Yeah,
that's just, you know, if they go, you know. What, 17 of 35? That's, again, it's a different ballgame. But that's begs the question of why are these guys taking that many shots now?
And
why is Isaiah Thomas taking more shots than LeBron James in less minutes?
Yeah, and it just feels like...
Why is Dwayne Wade taking more shots than Kevin Love in less minutes?
Right. It feels like the Cavs can't play good offense and good defense at the same time. You know what I mean? Like... If they're playing
well, they did in the defense, first half, in like, the second quarter, that second quarter, they were playing good offense and good defense.
Yeah, but can't
that
sustain
lasted
it.
A quarter.
Yeah, and then in the third quarter, I thought at the beginning of the quarter they were playing good defense, and then they kind of Kevin Love got going, and then they were still kind of playing good defense, but they were just wasting so many possessions offensively.
Well, there were a lot of second chance opportunities.
Well, that's true too. Yeah,
I mean, like, they had 13 offensive rebounds.
The Cavs guards are just really bad at boxing out and also just, you know, crashing for defensive rebounds. And I don't know why. I mean, it just makes no sense. I mean, when you're as slow as those guys are, why wouldn't you be bad at that? But then the other part of that.
Well, the free throw disparity too was a problem for a lot of the game. It evened up later on, but. You know, but they still
the Warriors
the
got a lot
Warriors
of calls.
To the line 30 times.
Well, yeah. The Warriors got a lot of calls. There was a stretch of about 3 horrific out of bounds calls. It was just like, what are you calling?
I mean,
it was just the Warriors seemed to get the benefit of the doubt on every single call. The Cavs, yeah, and they just wasted too many possessions, and you can't just waste possessions against the Warriors. It's like playing the Colts when Peyton Manning was there. If you score field goals instead of touchdowns, or you come away with no points, you're not going to win, you know, and you have to keep the pressure on them. You have to make them play defense. You can't settle for a quick shot. You either have to run for really good shots, or you have to work the offense and, you know, make them play defense. And that's how the Cavs won in the playoffs. And that's how – and the Cavs got suckered into their pace earlier – or in the third quarter. And that was the ballgame. So.
Yeah.
So for my money, I'm very frustrated with Tyronn Lue. I don't want him around anymore, but you have talked me into the fact that we see through a glass darkly, and we may not.
Well, by the way, you can feel free to disagree with me.
No. I mean, you convinced me that we're not seeing everything that we should see. I mean, I certainly, some things drive me nuts. I will say the couple of things that drive me insane more than anything are the fact that, you know, we see things that work and then the Cavs don't do them anymore. Like that, you know, right wing pick and roll or Channing Frye or the, you know, the Wildcat / Jumbo sure. offense last year.
Every year there's things that work and then until they are discarded. And
right.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I can't imagine that Tyronn Lue doesn't see that these things work. I think it's probably the most frustrating thing for him. I'm just putting myself in his shoes right now. Okay. Probably the most frustrating thing for him to hear the questions from reporters God forbid he goes on this blog or, you know, other blogs
that
trash him mercilessly. Yeah. I mean, you know, look, the guy, if I'm in issues, I'm like, what the hell can I do realistically? I mean, sure, I can do these things or I can try these things, but, you know, but if they're not the way that is going to make LeBron and the rest of my veterans happy, then what am I gonna do with that, right? Like, he's said from the beginning of the year he's gonna have to experiment with a lot of different lineups, and he's been doing that. I mean, a lot of guys played tonight. I mean, not just in garbage time, but a lot of guys, I mean, you know, typically in a game against the Warriors, wouldn't he play like 8 guys, maybe?
Yeah, they had 9 guys with 15 minutes or more. So
yeah. Yeah. So I mean, he's playing guys. Like, that was the big complaint last year, was that why are you playing LeBron 40 minutes a game and you're not playing Kevin Love in the fourth quarter and you're not playing any guys on the bench? You're just literally playing.
The counter argument would be that Ty Lue is always fighting last year's battle. So
sure. And maybe that's true. And I'm not defending him as a coach.
Right.
He may be horrible. We may be seeing the fact that, like, hey, he's just a guy that knows how to talk to LeBron and, you know, and
the LeBron makes it.
Yeah, it makes a living off of inbounds plays or something like that. I don't know, but he certainly hasn't. I don't feel like he's done a very good job in recruiting defensive minds to be around him, because I don't have any faith in Mike Longobardi after the disaster in Phoenix and now the disaster that the Cavs defense has been the last 2 years since he's been here, right? I mean, think about that. Like, since Mike Longobardi joined the team, the Cavs have consistently been in the bottom 5 of the NBA from a defensive standpoint.
Yeah.
That's not getting a job done. You know,
why
so,
does he still have a job?
Why does he still have a job? That's the guy I'd fire. I mean, look, if you're going to bring it, if there was ever a time to bring in like a Mike Brown type of coach, bring in a guy like that. Fire him and see if Fizz will come in and be your defensive coordinator off the bench.
That's not a bad idea.
Right? I mean, if you want to – I'm just saying to you, if you want new blood in the coaching staff, that's the way to do it. Because the chance – who's firing Ty Lue anyways? Dan Gilbert? Because I certainly don't think Kobe Altman is going to fire him.
Well,
he ain't David – He ain't David Griffin yet.
Kobe Altman is an anagram for Dan Gilbert.
Yeah, I'm just – it's – we all drive ourselves crazy – and by the way, I don't drive myself crazy because I subscribe to what Ben said last week or whatever, which is a giant don't care. I don't care. I still don't think there's any way this team is either A, missing the playoffs, or B, not going to be one of the top 4 seeds in the East, or C, not getting to the finals. I don't have any faith. But I mean, look, Toronto's been good like this before. You know, Boston's been good like this before.
The Shaq year they won the playoffs, they were the 4th seed and they struggled to get to the 4th seed.
Sure.
You know, so there's an example of a team that, you know, you don't have to be a 1 or 2 seed to win at all. Especially when you're an older team and you're kind of coasting through the regular season.
Look, I think they're playing. I think you're playing Wade way too much. Like, there's no way Wade should play 25 minutes a night.
No, right? I agree. Like, I think that's part of the problem with Dwayne Wade right now. He needs to be playing 15.
Well, and that's the only, by the way, that's the only reason I would, I guess, welcome Derrick Rose back just to take up some of those minutes. Yeah. But I'd rather Calderon get them. But,
well, I would too. But it's just, I'd rather, you know, Chetty Osmond get him. But the other part of that is this is my big frustration. And
yeah, but Chetty's not a guard. I mean, but I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
So my big frustration with Dwayne Wade and my big fear was, okay, he's going to be the guy we saw last year, takes a lot of shots, you know, doesn't always play defense, you know, can kind of shoot you into it or shoot you out of it. But the problem is this year he'll have even less accountability than he did last year because he's a guy on a minimum contract and he's LeBron James' best friend. Well,
yeah.
You know, and we've kind of seen the problem with that the last, you know, it was great when it was working during the winning streak, and it's not been great, you know, since pretty much since the holidays, because I feel like mid-December the Cavs just kind of checked out mentally, and they're kind of starting to crawl out of that. But you also have to, you know, I have to keep reminding myself, it is January. The January Cavs are the worst Cavs, you know. I feel like LeBron should just go to Miami for 3 weeks every January.
Yeah, he probably should. But here's the thing. We're always trying to find ways to defend why they're not a good enough regular season team. They're not – I mean, you look around the league and you say, well – you know, Golden State has no problem getting up for games throughout the regular season. They're going to probably win another 60, 65 games this year. Houston seems to have no problem winning regular season games when one of their major guys isn't injured. You know, Boston isn't having any problems winning regular season games because that's the way they play. They play, they run 10 to 12 deep and everybody plays and everybody rotates, everybody switches. Everybody has young legs, and you know that's the way it is. And they're a defensive team. They start with defense first. And the Cavs haven't been a defense first team since the anomaly of the 2015 Finals, and then before that, probably 2009 or 10, right? When the last year that Mike Brown was here, right? Or the first time around. So. That's just it. Like I don't think we're ever going to see this iteration of Cavaliers team play great defense on a regular basis. It's just not going to happen. And they're going to save their energy. And with the exception, I mean, look, they tried tonight. Like LeBron was clearly trying tonight.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but they missed a lot of shots because Isaiah Thomas isn't up to speed yet, and Dwayne Wade played too many minutes and
took dumb shots.
They took dumb shots. So that's the problem. Those are things that you hope won't happen once the playoffs roll around, that Isaiah will be back to his old self, or at least some reasonable facsimile of that, that LeBron, you know, will be LeBron again in the playoffs as he usually is, that Wade will have enough left in the tank to be better than not. And, you know, those things that you counted, that you tinkered with and you counted on through the season will pay dividends, but they're never going to be the regular season team that we all want them to be.
The converse of that is that these other teams identify guys and get guys on their bench that are really good, that kind of sustain when the starters aren't in. And the Cavs had done that earlier this year, but for whatever reason, it's not happening. So,
They've also had a massive reintegration. They had to reintegrate Tristan Thompson, who is a giant, you know, plug in the middle of the offense and hasn't regained his defensive form. And because
Tristan, one of his problems is carrying too much weight. He just seems too big to me, like for the way he plays.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if he got leaner, got a little more jump, and, you know, played a little, was a little more springy, he would be a lot better.
Do you kind of feel that way? Dude, Yeah, I do. And the truth is, if they could trade him and Shump and their own pick for DeAndre Jordan, and the Clippers would take that, 100%. I'm all in on that.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not going to happen. George Hill. But you still need somebody to play for Tristan. You have to either get a more in-shape Tristan back to his old form, or someone to replace him that's either, you know, cheaper, and then you're filling in with taking on another bad contract, or you're convincing the Clippers that it's not going to get any better than this. You're not going to get a better offer for a guy who can opt out next year. So, you know, blow it up now.
Yeah.
But the Clippers have fooled themselves into thinking that they can still compete in the West because they're 500 now.
Well, but, and they're beating the Rockets right now. So
without James Harden, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm just commenting on the score, Derek.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, that's...
Man, you're fired up tonight.
I am fired up because I haven't been on in a while, and I feel like there's so much. Look, everyone gets so down this time of year. It's January. Yeah. I get it. Most of us who read or listen to the blog or this podcast live in cold weather climates where this time of year sucks. Like, it's, and this year probably worse than most, yeah, because it's really cold.
It has not been a fun January. I will say that.
I was there. I was there over in the first week of January.
Yeah,
and it was cold as hell
for 2 weeks.
And I got sick. And I got the worst chest cold I've had in years. So yeah, that's what you get for your trouble. But I get it. I get that people are upset. I get that people are bummed out and disappointed about the blowout losses to playoff teams and the barely beating the non-playoff teams and, you know, choking away a 22-point lead to the Pacers, who try really hard. And I get it. I get the frustration with Ty Lue. I get the frustration with LeBron jump passes and Ty Lue's decision not to play guys like Seti or Channing or develop anybody, but that's what it is. We all have to realize that the trade-off for this kind of stuff is this team's been to the finals every year since LeBron came back. Guess what? They'll probably do it again this year. So, and they won one championship. I'm probably in the majority that believe it's going to be really hard for them to win another one, barring some kind of catastrophic injury to the Warriors. But, you know, you never know. You never know how the dice can roll. All you can ask for is the shot at it. And the Cavs still have one of the best shots at it out there, despite what it might seem like right now in the moment, and despite what the media would want you to believe, that, like, Charles Barkley tonight saying, I don't think the Cavs get back to the finals. Well, you know what? Until they don't, they're gonna. So, you know, it's just silly. It's silly that we all get so sort of wrapped up in it and, you know, feel like the sky is falling.
I think it's silly. I mean, that's part of, you know, the NBA wants you to be wrapped up in it. And
yeah, of course they do.
To counterpoint you a little bit, you know, one of the things that, you know, bothers me a little bit about the Cavs and treating the regular season like an extended preseason is, you know, it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be fun for, you know, 5 months or whatever until the playoffs start. And the Cavs have kind of made it joyless. And even these other teams that, you know, like the Sixers or... some of these teams that are, you know, the Nets that are fighting to, you know, for respectability, or some of these teams that are, you know, just over 500, like the Pelicans, there's at least a joy there and an effort, and they have to bring it every night. And the fact that the Cavs don't is really frustrating, and it's kind of like the free rider problem. And I feel like the NBA, in a way, does have a bit of a regular season problem and does have a bit of a, you know, The Warriors, there's four teams that are so much, and maybe five teams now that are so much better than everybody else, and then aside from them, it's like nobody else is any good. So it is a little frustrating, but you know, like you said, it's the trade-off for playoff basketball. So
not even playoff basketball. It's a trade-off for championship basketball. Because
okay. Yeah.
Because if it was playoff basketball, I would agree with you. If it was playoff basketball, I would say, well, come on, guys, like these games do matter, and seeding does right. matter, and the home court does matter, and the Cavs have shown time and time again through the last few seasons that it quite frankly doesn't matter. So until it that's the problem. It's not going to matter until it actually has an impact, right? Yeah. So when's it going to have an impact? Well, maybe it will this year. Maybe the Celtics are better than they're even getting credit for. Maybe Toronto is. Maybe Milwaukee or the Heat will come up and surprise people. But the truth is, these are, you know, no matter what, you can always look at it and say, well, there's always going to be a game tomorrow until you get to the playoffs, right? Yeah. So I agree with you. I'd love for it to be more fun. It was a lot of fun when they were on the winning streak, yeah. right? I mean, it was fun for a long time. It's only not been fun for the last, like, 2 weeks, right?
That's true.
So, I think we're prisoners of the moment. Which is extended to...
You need to make a movie called Prisoners of the Moment.
Probably. But it's extended beyond what we're hoping, right? Like, there was that rough week against... I think it was like the Kings, and there was that rough patch where they, and then they kind of came out of it, and then they went back on the road again, and you know, it's been bad. And the first couple of games back with Isaiah were uplifting, but even he said today that was fool's gold, right? I mean, they were good, but like, you know, he got, yeah, exactly. But he stole it that won't from be me, for by the long. Way. No, I didn't steal. I didn't steal Pirate.
No,
I just
no,
here,
no.
Take credit for it. But I'm just saying.
I wasn't saying you did. I was saying Isaiah did.
Oh, that IT did. Yeah, yeah. He did. Pirate. But all I'm saying is that Isaiah, unless he re-injures the hip, God forbid, I'm touching wood. But unless that happens, the chances are he's going to probably regain what he had last year, which is a really good offensive player. A really not good defensive player. Yeah. Yeah, but then I think you'll see a lot of the February, March, April games in the regular season will be outscoring people like 130 to 122.
Okay.
But they'll win games because Isaiah will be back, and you know, they'll give up points, but they'll score a lot of points. And they'll play enough of these guys, so they're going to have to, depending on what happens at the trade deadline, they're going to have to reintegrate, I guess, Derrick Rose and Iman Shumpert too. So, you know, talk about if you thought that Seti and Fry weren't getting time now, just wait. Like, they'll be in suits pretty soon. Like, they won't even be, you know, available for
so
playing games. No, but that's the reality of this team. They are old. They are old. They were old last year. They're older this year. Not by much, because they lost RJ and James Freaking Jones. But but yeah, look, I mean, guys are diminishing. J.R. Smith is not the guy he was a year or two ago.
No, you know? I'll agree with that.
Crowder's not the guy he was last year.
Yeah, that's the most depressing one. It's like, and maybe he just hasn't figured it out yet. Hopefully he starts to come around. And that's the other thing. I mean, the Cavs are still got a pretty good record with as bad as they played in stretches. So
sure.
There's a lot of room for guys to improve. So,
man, this is the first time they've lost at home in 13 games. So, and it was to the defending champions. Yeah. And they were in the game until the last 5 minutes. So, or 2 minutes, whatever. So, you know,
yeah.
they'll be okay. They'll probably still win 50 to 52 games. They'll probably be the 3 seed, and they'll probably have to make it harder themselves and play both the Raptors and the Celtics to get out of the East. But they'll probably do it, and they'll probably have another, you know, 5 or 6 game series against the Warriors that they come up just short in the finals, and rinse, wash, repeat I mean, in my opinion, I mean, I could be dead wrong. And LeBron might be planning right now to say, like, I've had enough of this cold weather, and I'm gonna go somewhere warm, and I don't care. Yeah,
that's how everyone
maybe,
feels in jail.
By the way, maybe that's the biggest draw for LA or Houston is that you can just go play in the warm weather for most of the time. But God, guess what? You still have to go on the road. You still have to go play these places.
Too warm.
Yeah, Houston's so humid. Yeah, I agree.
It's miserable. Anyway,
so do you think the Cavs will make any moves coming up?
I think they will shake the tree, see what's available, but I don't want them to give up Osman. I don't want them to give up the Nets pick. And aside from that, they don't really have anything. So
I've got their own pick and a bunch of guys.
That's it.
Expiring, I guess, right?
Yeah, they've got Ante Zizic and their own pick. So, and, you know, and cap fodder. So,
right.
I would love to see a Dwayne Dedman. I think he'd be a great fit. You know, I'm not a
soul. Dwayne Dedman or Kylo Quinn? Who wins in your book?
I like Dwayne Dedman. I think he's a better shooter. Kylo Quinn's
just
a much cheaper contract.
Just because he developed a 3-point shot this year?
Yeah. I mean, that's not nothing.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm not saying it is.
Yeah, so, you know, I like that. I think he's a good defender, too. But he's not, you know, not a guy that can switch. Kylo Quinn, a lot of toughness there. But I do feel like they need to get bigger from the center spot because I think even more than previous years, these big centers are going to be a problem if they end up facing one in the playoffs. But, you know, who is it? Valanciunas has never really given them an issue aside from that last Raptors game. And you don't see anybody in the East that's going to do that. And, you know, if the Rockets make it to the finals and they have to deal with Clint Capella, I guess they just figure out how to live with that. But, I mean, well, I actually think the Rockets in some ways are a worse matchup for the Cavs than the Warriors. But, because I feel like at least the Cavs,
except for the fact that neither CP3 nor James Harden are clutch players, so
yeah, well, that's true too. So, but yeah, I think the Cavs they may make some minor moves. I would not be surprised to see a way to get Derrick Rose off the team. And then
word is he might be back in the next couple of games.
Yeah. And then find a way to bring in a Derek Williams, you know, bring in another wing, which,
yeah,
whatever. I read an interesting thing today that said Griffin wanted Ty Lue to play Derek Williams in the finals, but he wouldn't.
I read that too. Yeah. I read that too.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, what do you think that is? You think I'm right that's just the more LeBron thing, and that's just Ty Lue protecting LeBron, where he doesn't trust Derek Williams? Or do you think that's Ty Lue actually making that decision to say, I don't want to play Derek Williams?
I think that's Ty Lue. I mean, I mm-hmm. think he did. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to choose.
Doesn't trust him?
Yeah, well, I think the whole dysfunction of, you know, none of us are very clear on who's running what is half the problem with the Cavs. You know, there's a lot of constant power struggles there, I feel like. And they probably all kind of chafe at this stuff all the time. And the players, you know, it's got to get old. I think one of the biggest problems, the thing to me that frustrates me about what we've seen in the last, you know, 3 weeks from the Cavs is that they're proving Kyrie Irving right of all the kind of weird subtexty.
What, that the world is flat?
No, just like all the stuff about, you know, all the weird stuff about, you know, I wanted to play point guard. I want a team with a, you know, a coach that puts me in a position to win, that coaches me, blah, blah, blah. You know, I feel like he is in a much more functional situation. And he
sure.
kind of let
he's
everybody
still
know.
Got a lot of nonsense. We still got a lot of nonsense rolling around in his head, though. I mean, let's not pretend that Kyrie wasn't also a problem.
Well, yeah, and did if you read that screed about conspiracy theories and everything he was reading on Instagram and where the flat earth stuff came from, you're like, this guy is a freaking loon.
Oh, here's the thing. I think he hasn't, I don't think he's really been tested yet as a leader of that team. And I think once that happens, we'll see if he was right or not. But he was right. You're right. I mean, look, it's clear that Brad Stevens will find ways to use guys. I'm not a big Brad Stevens fan, and not because Brad Stevens isn't talented and a very good coach. I've always reacted more to the anointing by the rest of the world of President Brad Stevens,
the fawning,
as opposed to
the constant fawning.
Yeah, it's enough already. Like, by the way, once he starts winning things, I got no problem with it. But until that happens, let's stop already.
And stop the madness.
It's funny because he's actually one of the most humble guys when you hear him be interviewed, yeah, where he's always saying the right, and who knows if he really believes it, but he says the right things, and he's always very, he's got a lot of humility, as opposed to, say, you know, his rookie who seems to think that they're already the best team in the East. So,
Tatum?
Yeah, yeah. But that's fine. Tatum's like, really good. He's good. Yeah. Again, he hasn't, I don't think he's not consistently good. Like, he's had some good games.
But for a rookie,
and
he's really good.
He definitely shoots the three ball a lot better than I think anybody thought he would, but.
Yeah, and, not taking Markelle Fultz and trading to where they did just.
Oh, sure.
It just pisses me off. Like, no, look, the fact that they have.
You have to give credit where credit is. Credit where credit is due. That I was long a detractor of Danny Ainge because he did nothing with a lot of this stuff for a long time. But look, maybe he got his timing right. We'll find out this playoffs, right?
Yep.
We'll find out if he got his timing right.
I don't think so much. About, and if he didn't, playoffs, then he might be like the next three. But
yeah, but again, like he's made the right moves this year. He seemingly got the better end of this deal with the Cavs, but. You know, it won't really be able to be judged until we find out what happens with the Brooklyn pick. But and if Isaiah can come back and be the player he was. But, you know, look, I didn't like the trade when it happened. I understood the need for it or, you know, the position that they found themselves in. I really wish it wouldn't have been to Boston because I never liked making the team that's immediately chasing you better. And, you know, make no mistake, Kyrie's made them better for sure.
Yeah,
but will he make them a champion? I don't know. I don't know if Kyrie has the DNA to be the guy. You know,
I think we found out in 2015 that he did. So
16.
Was it 16? Sorry.
Yeah.
You're right.
Again, he was the guy who hit the shot, but he wasn't the guy.
Yeah, well,
he wasn't the guy.
To me, he was the guy. In terms of playing. But anyway, I kind of want to change gears a little bit and talk about what really matters in January, and that is movies. So what's your pick for Picture of the Year? Or who do you think is some of the ones that are going to get nominated? Nominations haven't come out yet, right?
Yeah, haven't come out. Come out soon. But you can... I mean, usually the Golden Globes is a pretty good progenitor for those things. No question, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri got a nice bump from that win. You know, it's funny. It wasn't a particularly strong year for movies. You know, as far as like Best Picture goes, there are a lot of really great performances.
Deeper than it was top heavy this year.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, there wasn't.
There's a lot of people. I read a lot of critics that really want Get Out to get recognized.
Yeah, it won't though. I mean,
which is unfortunate.
It was definitely. It's unfortunate, but it's the kind of movie it was. It's a horror film. It's not going to get. I mean, you have to literally be. You know, I think the last, like, true horror film.
The Exorcist, probably.
Yeah, The Exorcist. I was going to say Silence of the Lambs, but that wasn't really a horror film so much as a suspense thriller.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to go back to, like, The Exorcist, something that was truly, like, you know, groundbreaking. I'm not saying that Get Out it's not groundbreaking, but and it was a really well done film, but I don't think it's not going to get that recognition. I do think Lady Bird will get a lot of recognition.
Have you seen it?
I have. It's a really well done film. And it's, I hope she gets nominated, Greta Gerwig, the director, because, right, you know, she deserves it, that she really directed a terrific movie.
Well, and I think politically that's probably a pretty safe movie to get some nominations. So
sure. But, you know, the big names like The Post, you know, Spielberg movie, or All the Money in the World. I mean, these are movies that were just okay. None of them were like, you know, standout stellar films. A lot of people like Dunkirk. I fell asleep.
I thought Dunkirk was really, you know, now that we're, I thought it was really overrated. And the thing that irritated me about Dunkirk more than anything was they did not do a good job of conveying the scale of the operation. Like they rescued what, like 200,000 people, and literally you saw like 20 boats in the harbor.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, so 20 boats rescued 200,000 people. That makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like this is just really poorly conveyed right here. And like you said, it was kind of dull. Like you said, there was a lot of good performances. So my film of the year, I just watched, and I thought it was fan-freaking-tastic. And I'm a little irritated with myself for not having watched it already, but the new Blade Runner 2049 was awesome. Yeah. I thought it was one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. Just beautifully shot, great script. Just
a little
really
too long.
A little too long, but I didn't mind it. I thought it was really organically that long. Like,
no, he's talented filmmaker, Denis Villeneuve. Yeah,
and the cast was really good. I did maybe want a little more diversity in the cast, but you know, other than that, that's a minor complaint. It was really good. I liked that a lot. And then trying to think of what else. I haven't seen The Shape of Water yet. Have you seen that one?
Shape of Water is really good. Yeah, Shape of Water is really good. It'll definitely get nominated. And some people feel like it has a decent shot to win. I mean, Guillermo won Best Director at the Golden Globes. So you never know. But it's odd. It's some, you know, some of the smaller festival movies have really, you know, really come to the forefront this year.
Yeah, what's that one?
Which is why.
What's that one with Willem Dafoe in my? It takes place in Orlando.
Oh right, the Florida Project.
The Florida Project, yeah, one.
That was.
Did you see it?
Yeah, that was good. The other one, Call Me by Your Name, will get some attention too.
How was that?
I mean, it was really well acted. I don't know if I love the movie, but well done. You know, I mean, it'll get some. I think that kid Timothy Chalamet will, you know, will be a strong contender for best actor. So,
yeah.
I mean, like I said, I think there's no clear cut front runner this year. Like there has been, I think, in past years. It seems very, very divided. So I think you'll see a lot get nominated for Best Picture. I mean, they might use the full 10 this year, but
I hope I think Get Out gets nominated, but
maybe. I mean, with ten slots, it might.
Yeah, but, like Arrival the other day was a movie in years past, or a couple of years, yeah, last year.
Yeah,
year
last
before.
Year, yeah.
In years past, that never would have been nominated, you know.
Yeah.
And I like the expanded nominations. You know, I just made my wife sit through Hell or High Water, which I think is just a fantastic movie, too. So
Really well done. Well, if you get a chance to see Three Billboards, if you haven't seen it, it's a good film. It's got a little bit of it leaves a little bit of an odd taste, I think, with the current state of I think race relations as far as the authorities go, but I do think it's again some great performances. Sam Rockwell's great. Frances McDormand is fantastic.
As always, my all-time favorite actress.
Yeah, she's terrific.
Or one of them. Her and, of course, you know, there's Meryl Streep, too. So.
Yeah.
or as I call her, the greatest actor in the history of film. So, or as, what was it? I always said that I wanted Frances McDormand to play my mom in the biography of my life.
The Nate Smith story?
The Nate Smith story, that's right.
Who plays Ty Lue in the Nate Smith story?
Ty Lue would be played by a goldfish.
I would think he'd be played by Marionette Ty Lue.
Marionette Ty Lue? Who's it, pulling the strings?
No, probably Trey and Matt. Probably you do it like, you know, like World Police.
No, the biopic of my life is much more serious.
There's no Ty Lue in your biography.
Probably not. Yeah, it's not a comedy.
It has to be a foil, though. Like, who's
my foil? Probably my best friend or one of my best friends growing up that was kind of simultaneously a bully and a good friend of mine. So yeah. He would probably be the foil, and then
right the guy that comes around in the end.
Kind of, yeah. Exactly.
All right.
Yeah, it would be an interesting story. I've got a lot of stories I've never told you. You know, I grew up in a cult, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I know. Well, no, I don't know that, but I know there are stories you have not told me, so.
Yeah, so someday.
That'd make for an interesting. Yeah, sure.
No,
sure.
I've always wanted to write the story, so.
Okay.
So there you go.
I know some people who can make some films, so.
There you go. So anything else you want to pitch? Any sleeper movies? I told you I got to see finally Roman J. Israel, really enjoyed it.
Oh, good. Good.
I
probably not a contender for Best Picture, but Denzel, I think,
could definitely get a nomination. He was fantastic. And didn't play the same role Denzel plays in a lot of movies. So I really felt like he went against the grain a lot in that film.
Yeah, maybe too much though, but
no,
you know,
maybe,
but still
I thought he was fantastic. And I thought the film had a lot of good things to say. You know.
So, well, thanks.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a very interesting discussion of kind of how, you know, the new age of, you know, civil rights and, you know, social causes, people interact with the older generations of people that fought that fight, and how maybe we don't have enough respect for them, but also how they kind of have a hard time bridging the gap between each other. So I thought that was a really good exploration of that. So
yeah, no question. No question.
Anything you want to pitch?
I finally got around to watching, David Fincher's series Mindhunter on Netflix, which was excellent. Starts a little slow, but it's only 8 episodes, or is it 10? But it's really, as you go along, it's really good, very well cast. Really well written, and directed.
What is it? Is it sci-fi?
It's the history of the beginnings.
Oh, the profiling
Profiling and identifying serial killers by interviewing ones that they knew about. So, you know, they would go around and, you know, it's based on a book about one of the original profilers at the FBI.
Okay,
started.
So it's not like a documentary.
No, it's sort of a, you know, it's loosely based on a book and real events, but definitely
the same way as Zodiac.
Yeah. Yeah, very much in that vein. I mean, if you know Fincher's work in that space, it's
Zodiac's a great movie.
So. Yeah, sort of like Zodiac, the anthology series.
Okay. Yeah, there's so much good sci-fi out now. You know, I really want to check out new Netflix series just came out on Philip K. Dick. Not Netflix, Prime. There's a Prime series of all Philip K. Dick stories. And then, of course, the new season of Black Mirror. And then...
Have you watched it yet?
I have not watched. I've tried to watch Black Mirror twice, and both times I got stuck on the first episode. And a couple people have told me that the first episode is really not indicative of the series as a whole, so you should skip it if you didn't like it.
The first episode of this season, or
no,
overall?
In general.
Oh, in general, yeah. The are you talking about the national anthem? The one about the.
Well, it's Bryce Dallas Howard, and then all the.
Oh no, that's the first. Stuff. That's the first episode of last season.
Oh, okay. See, I get all messed up.
That's right. Has it been forced? Every season gets longer, much probably to its detriment. Like the first season was only 3 episodes, and then season 2 was 4. I think last season was 4, and then this season was 6, which was too many.
Okay,
but there's some. You can go online. There was an article today that ranked them all 19 of them, so you can see which order to watch them in. Yeah, watch them in that order, and you'll be fine.
Okay, and then the other one I want to watch is Stars has a new show starring J.K. Simmons about parallel universes. So
That looks
counterpart.
Cool too.
So I want to see
that. That looks pretty cool. Yeah.
Anyway, lots of you're stuck in the house in January. And it's looking like tomorrow maybe yet another snow day, which most of us had a snow day Friday, and then a lot of us had a snow day the week before. So it's looking like today maybe another snow day. So we will we will try to survive. But thanks for the dose of sanity on the Cavs, and not taking this loss too hard or too soft, and we'll kind of continue down that road. So
who do they have coming up? I think it's the rest of the month is not easy, but no, at least they're at home a little bit more.
It's been a tough road so far.
They got Orlando on Thursday, so a few days off to recover from this. Then they've got Oklahoma City, but it's at the queue on Saturday.
Yep.
But it's nice. They don't have a lot of I don't think they have another back-to-back until the end of the month with Detroit and Miami on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. So
then they play the Spurs in San Antonio, which is really tough because I guess they're one of the best home teams in the league. And then a Pacers game, which the Pacers have had their number this year, so getting them back would be really good. And then back-to-back or home and home against the Pistons, Detroit. And then finishing out against Miami on the 31st. So it's going to be a tough couple weeks, but hopefully we can get a – hopefully they keep improving. So
I think they will. I think they will. I think we'll see them generally turn things around. It's still going to be a rocky road. I mean, I think they're on track for about 52 wins. I still think they'll win 50. But it probably won't be a whole lot more than that. And it'll be good for about what they were good for last year, which is probably second or third place. So.
Well, and this has been Cavs a Podcast. I'm Nate Smith with Evil Genius. And as always, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blogs Podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers.